Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Well, we want to welcome you once again to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. I'm Brent Smith alongside my very good friend Shane Stetsny. Big weekend, especially for me this weekend, Shane, with being my hometown. Crannage, your hometown. We love to announce in Bark River, man. It's going to be great.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Bark River. I'm already on the record saying this, but Bark River is my favorite place to go. Crandon's awesome. I love it. I love the history there, but you know, we're celebrating history in Bark River too. It's 50 years and it kind of feels like my second racetrack home in a way. So I'm just as excited as you are, I think. Maybe not as excited as you being a Bark River kid, but pretty darn close.
Hey, I feel it, buddy. When I was in your neck of the woods all the time, Crandon felt the same to me than Bark River. I mean, it just gives me a little bit more incentive to want to be there. I mean, very close in my heart, Bark River, and what they do as the Lions Club is just amazing, and what they do to put it together and donate to the community, and that club just goes so deep in their hearts, and they're very serious about what they have at Bark River. 50 years is a long time, Shane, and I'm glad we're around to enjoy it. I mean, the Grand Marshal is going to be Dave Vandermessen Sr. I mean, great family friend. Awesome. It's so cool to see that, the Richard Ault legacy long jump. I mean, gives me goosebumps, honestly. I just knew those guys very well, and they'd be proud of where it's gone.
Yeah, and we'll talk about all that. But first, I think for me, and for really a lot of the industry, the power sports industry, the big headline, the big story that broke this week, kind of an open secret to an extent, but Owen and Rodney Van Epperen, they are making a comeback this year at Crandon. They're going to be debuting brand new CF Moto USA Z10 side-by-sides in pro side-by-side. That is huge news. I've seen a whole bunch of different power sports pages and publications pick up on this story. Everywhere I've scrolled on Facebook the last 2 days, I've seen pictures of those cars. And we really can't understate how big of a deal this is. It's a new to the U.S. market manufacturer, for the most part. A pretty new model. The Z10 model has only been out for a couple of years now. And to make their racing debut, they're choosing Champ Off-Road, not desert racing, not rock racing, not something else. They want to race in Champ Off-Road. That's a big deal for us.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, I miss those guys. When they listen to the podcast, it's not the same without Owen and Ronnie Van Epperen in the fields. And to see what they're doing with a new company and bringing it to the next level, I mean, that if that don't give you goosebumps and make you really open your eyes to see what they're doing. Yeah, late in the season they entered, but they are going to be out to win races right away. Those things are beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, what are your expectations, knowing the standard that Owen and Rodney have set basically for themselves over the last half dozen years plus? How do you expect they're going to do, you know, debuting a brand new manufacturer, a brand new platform in Champ Off-Road? I expect they're going to be wicked fast right from the jump.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, back 20 years ago, Shane, when somebody would start a new class, it's like, all right, they'll get their feet wet. They're going to have their gremlins. But you got to remember, they're at the top of their game, and no matter what they put themselves behind the wheel of, and they have dyno time, right? Technology is so advanced now with Johnny Fitzgerald building the cars.
It's still all the same people behind the scenes too. I mean, it's John Fitzgerald building the cars, and it's Noah Sanders right, and the whole team putting those cars together. So, I mean, like I said, they've set a standard of excellence. I think they're not going to come out and be anything less than top-notch right from the first time those cars hit the dirt at Crandon.
They're going to be ready no matter what. And to do it right away, yeah, some people might be like, yeah, they might have teething problems, gremlins, but I don't see that happening. They're ready to be locked and loaded for Bark River, and it's going to be amazing to see. I mean, obviously the driving's there. It's the new equipment. And they're going to battle test it. I promise you that.
Well, the other big headline, and we touched on it a little bit already, but basically what this episode's all about, man, 50 years of racing in Bark River. Like I said, you're born and raised in Bark River. You know, your parents live, 3 miles from the racetrack? You've been there your whole life. What does this race and the fact that it's made it 50 years really mean to the community in Bark River and the surrounding area?
Man, it means everything, right? I mean, not just the race car drivers, not just the racing families in the local area, but the passion from the people and knowing it's going to a good cause and, you know, to bring in that advertisement to the community and the families is just huge, right? National TV, best racers in the world. I mean, to be around for 50 years, I remember hearing stories on and off about when Dave Vandermeer and Junior and Senior and Art Richard Ault and all those guys would go through the woods 2.5-3 miles and go home. Dave Vandermeer would change a tire, come back and still win the race. And like, that's never even been heard of. And now to see his father being there and Davey going to be there to see what these trucks and cars can do with the technology they have is just amazing. I mean, to see that in our town is awesome. That's all you look forward to, right? Kids at Crandon, you know that. You look forward to the big one, the Bark River races every year. Yeah, the fair was cool, but if you ask me and my brother, we'd rather stay at the off-roads for 2 weeks.
And I know that you interact a lot with the Lions Club members who actually run the racetrack. Like Scott Corciani is your chiropractor, so you right, see right. these people Thanks, out and Scott. About. You know, what's the excitement level for the club itself? They've got to be tired for one thing, but they've got to be really excited to celebrate such a huge milestone, right?
Oh, yeah. Their brains are going a mile a minute, and I'm telling you, they're doing everything in their power to do what they need to do to put on a great show, and they always do, but the stress level's there, I could tell, just going by the track, being around the people, and just feeling that energy change. But they're ready. They're happy. They're going to do whatever needs to be done to make everybody happy around them, and it's a big volunteer effort. There's nobody paid there. They're just showing up, putting in time. My mom, my sister, they're volunteering, cooking, and helping out with the food or whatever needs to be done. They're still looking for volunteers. So that's what it's all about, to get the community families together that make it really go around. And I think more of them need to come out of their house and check it out.
What about as you're, you know, hanging out around town, talking to friends, you know, what's the overall excitement level? Because I can remember really vividly the 50th, leading up to the 50th at Crandon a few years back. I was living in Crandon. And, you know, even for a couple weeks before, you know, the whole town just kind of felt a little bit different. There's a little bit extra juice for everybody. You getting the same sense from your friends up there in the Bark River area?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can feel it. I mean, just the local kids, you know, Brock and I just went to Massey's earlier today and just got a couple subs and, you know, people bugging us. Hey, you know, what's going on? How many trucks? How many people are coming this year? You think it'll be packed? How's the weather? You know, it's like that's the vibe I have going in Bark River. And I've been back and forth, you know, so many times this week and just seeing the signs getting put out. You know, you miss that growing up as a kid. Is you didn't realize how cool it was to ride your bike into Bark River on off-road weekend and see the banners hanging, the trucks out front. I mean, it's just cool to see the family ready to see another great off-road show. I mean, they wait for it. I'd love to have two races.
And part of the big show that they're all waiting for, and you touched on this also, is the return of the long jump contest. It's the Richard Ault Legacy Long Jump, named after longtime Lions Club president Richard Ault, who was a former racer himself. First off, what a great tribute for Richard, who, you know, gave so much of his time to leading the Lions Club, being a community organizer and helping make Bark River what it is today, right?
Yeah, Shane, it is. It's just so beautiful to see what they've done with it, to keep his name alive, and literally he deserves it. He's been around since day one. I remember seeing him up at the Vandermisses working on his cars when we were just young tykes on bikes, and I'm telling you, he did everything. You go up to him, Richard, be like, hey, go pick some rocks, Smitty's. Go get some buddies. Go get the football team. Pick some rocks. I'll give you guys each a pass. So we go out there, and he'd be like, well, you guys showed up. Here, take a pass. Come back tomorrow if you want to. He was just so giving. And no matter what he did, he wanted you to be there. He wanted people to know about it. You'd see him at the local restaurant. You'd have to go sit down by Richard. He'd just put a tear in your eye just to hear his stories and just the passion he had for the little town of Bark River to make this off-road sport go around.
So obviously a lot of us, the old heads, will remember when they had the long jump contest every year. But some of our fans, especially those of us, you know, there's a lot of people new to short course, new to Champ Off-Road. break down the long jump. It's basically what it says on the label, right? Everybody takes their shot at jumping over the big hill at Bark River. They bring out the measuring tape, and the longest jump wins, right?
Yeah, Shane, it's going to be who can go the farthest and stay on the gas the longest, right? I mean, they're going to have tape measures out there. Guaranteed, the nuttiest person's going to get the job done. I mean, there's big prize money, I heard. $15,000+ giving out to all the classes. Free barrels of VP race fuel. I mean, there's a lot up for grabs, and that's what the fans want to see, and I'm glad it's back.
Yeah, not just having, you know, money up for grabs, which is awesome. You mentioned, you know, I think it's $16,000. Some of that coming from Boss Snowplows, which is cool to have them supporting racing again at Bark River. The family of Richard Ault, of course, pitched in a bunch of money. So, yeah, there's actually a prize on the line, so we're going to see. It truly is a competition to see who can fly the farthest. It is divided by class, so you got pro trucks, pro buggy, side-by-sides, and super stocks, I think, are all the ones that are eligible for it. I was trying to think back on the previous years that they had the long jump contest. I think it was 2000 to 2006 that they had the contest. Do you have like a favorite memory? I think everybody who was around at that time has some vivid memory of something going badly wrong or really, really right for a driver. Do you have a favorite memory?
I just remember when Jason Baldwin launched off and he landed so far out by that tractor tire down on the flats, and I've never seen trucks go that far as a kid growing up, and when they had that long jump, it really showed how far those trucks could go.
I think my favorite one, maybe you'll remember this, probably would have been your stock truck era, but Jim Ritterbusch in the Formula 4x4. Do you remember him?
Oh yeah.
Flew like 180 feet, you know, Formula 4x4. They didn't have a ton of suspension. He used up all of it on the landing, bounced a couple times. Somehow stayed out of the concrete barrier, but I think he became kind of like the people's champ on that day. Like, flew distances that Pro 2s and Pro 4s were flying, but in a limited truck.
Yeah, he just put the loud pedal down and launched that truck off there. And that's what it's going to take, right? You want to bring the prize money home, but more or less do it for Richard Ault. I mean, it's going to take a lot of horsepower and a lot of guts, and I think we're in for a big treat on Friday night to get the weekend going.
Is there a strategy to the long jump besides just stay in the throttle and don't lift? I mean, I know there's some secrets. I remember drivers would modify their fiberglass bodies so the truck would fly a little bit different. You think we'll see any of that? And maybe a bigger question. I'm not encouraging this to happen, but it's not like there's tech for the long jump. Are we going to see drivers bend the rules a little bit, try to fly a little bit farther?
Hey, I don't want to call any drivers out though, Shane, but just in my neck of the woods the last couple weeks, there was a couple drivers talking about maybe putting parts on or taking parts off just to maybe get a little bit farther. And I was like, hey, you guys do what you got to do. And hey, if the rule book's open where it don't matter, you can maybe take the restrictor plate off, do what you need to do to go a little bit farther.
Do you have a memory of jumping in the contest yourself? I know you did it a couple times.
Yeah, I did it a couple different times. Probably shouldn't have been out there, but went and launched it. I think a total of like maybe 100 feet, maybe not even. But it was just cool to do it with the best in the world.
Hey, in stock truck, that's a respectable number, man.
Oh, yeah. And it was fun, right? Me and my brother were like, we might as well do it. And yeah, I'm excited for it to be back, Shane. It's going to be one little thing to the big weekend. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, by the way, a special guest is going to be on the call for the long jump contest. A Bark River favorite. I don't want to spoil it for you, but you know, someone beloved in the Bark River area is going to be part of that show. So, you know, one more way to give back to the fans a little bit. And again, all part of the 50 years celebration for Bark River International Raceway. This is something I was thinking about earlier this week and over the past few days leading up to this weekend. Over those 50 years, Bark River has had a ton of, you know, the area has had a ton of really talented, really successful off-road racers who, you know, made it to the national stage too and did really well. Kyle Kleiman, everybody remembers Chad Hoard. But who are some of the other drivers that you can think of up from your neck of the woods who maybe should be remembered more than they are?
I think a lot of guys don't get enough credit, and I see it in my local community coming into the 50th. Dave Andermiss Jr. and Sr., they're working on not only race cars throughout their years and doing very well, not getting into the Pro Light, Pro 2, Pro 4s, but running the Class 10s, running the big, what we call super buggies nowadays, and Pro Buggies. They were the guys to beat, and you just hear the community talk about them even to this day. Like, they were the ones to watch. And as a kid, my brother and I watching them. I mean, even Todd Wallace, Brad Erickson. I mean, sure. The list goes on and on. And you just got to give them drivers all respect just to make it happen. I mean, we looked up to those guys, right? Before the Kyle Duke, before the Rick Huseman, the Jason Baldwins. These guys were me and my brother's local heroes watching them, just like Mark Kleiman. I mean, he was winning 23, 24 races out of a year.
Yeah.
Between motocross and off-roads in one summer. And he was 50, 60 horsepower under some of the stock trucks back in the day, but he could drive. And, you know, all these local drivers had a little bit of talent when they started. And when they ended, they put a name in the book in off-road racing. And I think it's really great.
Fans who have followed Champ Off-Road since day one remember Kyle Kleiman winning a Pro 2 championship, winning a whole bunch of races in Pro Light before that. But, yeah, his dad was a wheelman. Super fun to watch when the sportsman stock class kind of became what we now call super stock truck. I also remember that he, after not racing for a handful of years, came back and then was just as fast as everybody, just like he always had been.
Oh, yeah. I remember those times, and those days were the best, right? And that's when it came down to driving. Now with a lot of these classes, when the money gets out of hand, you don't really see your great talented drivers. If they can't afford the budget, it's hard to get out there. And Mark Kleiman did whatever he could, and that ties in Mark Kleiman. I mean, Brock and I used to go up there and sweep floors while they were working on the stock truck, and Dave Vandermiss and Junior and Senior would be welding on Mark's truck. So it just was like a stepping stone. If you want to do good, you always looked at the people that already were there and done it, and they were always open-armed to help us, and that's what they do for the community. The Vandermissens would always work on the farms, local equipment. If you wanted something fixed, they did it and found time for everybody else. And like Davey said, we slept underneath the race trailer on the weekend because we knew we had work to do when we woke up.
Another really fun thing about always coming back to Bark River is that really Bark River was the birthplace of what is now the stock truck class. And another driver who was dominant in the early years of that class was Mike Mills, who's also from up in your neck of the woods. You raced against Mike a little bit, right? You kind of overlapped with him towards the tail end of his time.
Yeah, when he had that daggone big block chain, you couldn't catch him, right?
That's
and
what
then
they say.
When we were old enough to understand, we're like, okay, now we get to be in your league. And when we got a better motor package, we understood. But yeah, he put his name in the off-road world for a long, long time. And we heard about it in our community, but you got to give him credit. He's a great person, loved to drive, and he knew how to make the cars work. And it was fun to watch him growing up and learning from him.
And one more guy that I do want to single out here, people that have been around for, you know, over 10 years, certainly know the name Chad Horde. He was, you know, at the top of his game in Pro Light and in Pro 2, won some cup races at Crandon, won some championships in Pro Light. And then I feel like he left off-road racing so suddenly that maybe he doesn't get the recognition that he should as being not just maybe the greatest driver to come out of the Upper Peninsula, but one of the best to ever get behind the wheel of an off-road truck, right?
Yeah, and I agree with you 120%. He's just a good man himself, and what he did in the sport and came from the Pro Buggy division, worked his way up and created a name in Pro Light. And when it was on live TV back in the Baldwin days, he was winning races with Robert Naughton and running against Jeff Kincaid,
right?
The best in the business. He was laying down wins and then jumped into Pro 2. And there was a couple times where CJ Greaves couldn't even catch him at Crandon, right? I mean, he was dialed. Great program, great guy. He definitely earned his name in the sport, and it's hard for him to go watch. He doesn't even want to come watch because it gives him that itch.
Yeah, I certainly miss watching him race. And like you said, you know, Chad was one of the all-time great guys at the racetrack too.
Oh, yeah.
Always a friendly face, always seemed excited to spend some time with, you know, me, even when I was just a fan. So certainly I appreciate everything that Chad Horde poured into his racing efforts, no doubt about it.
Well, next up on the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil, we have Matt Wood from Champion, Michigan. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're doing good.
I'm doing extremely well. Excited to get up to Bark River. Obviously, it's a big weekend, 50th at Bark River. A lot to celebrate there. And I know that racing at Bark River means a lot to you too, right? Is Bark River kind of how you were introduced to short course off-road?
I don't know if the first race I went to was at Bark River or Crandon. I mean, we went for the last 20 plus years. I went every year. I mean, I started as a fan probably I've only been racing for like 8 years now, but my parents always went before that for the last 30 plus years. So right when I could walk and bring myself around, I was pretty much at the track from then on.
So basically like Brent and me.
Yep, exactly.
I know that when you were younger, like high school age, you were doing some motocross racing. How much were you into motocross racing, and was that something that you were trying to do competitively at kind of a high level, or was that more of just a hobby that you had at the time?
Yeah, that was motocross was kind of, I guess, my way to kind of itch the racing urge at that time. I couldn't afford to go in short course yet, and it was kind of right before they came out with the side-by-side classes, so there was no entry around here because nobody has too many short course cars around here, so it was kind of hard to get any knowledge from anybody to get into anything. So I raced motocross for probably a good 5 or 6 years, and I always did good. I podiumed and won lots, but I either won or I crashed, right? So I started getting hurt a lot, and then once the side-by-sides came out, I always wanted to run short course more than motocross anyways, so that was kind of our ticket in.
That's so cool that you had that background, right? I mean, some of the best in the sport have came from motocross, supercross, you know, Johnny Greaves, Ricky Johnson, and the list goes on, right? I mean, it is amazing to have that ability to transition into off-roads, but just to get that chance had to be exciting.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think that motocross is a huge like advantage just because of the lines and how the tracks develop and everything. You get that feeling and outlook on the dirt and everything like that when you're going into it, so you got a pretty good idea of what you're looking at already. Kind of an advantage, I would say, instead of hopping into it blind without doing any kind of racing like that before.
So like you said, it's been about 8 years that you've been in short course. I think the first four were all on the side by side, and then you made a pretty big jump straight into pro light. That's a big leap in cost. Way more difficult to run a truck program than a UTV program. Why was Pro Light the direction that you chose to go at that time?
I always wanted to run Pro Light. That was like the goal forever since I was little, as I always wanted to run Pro Light just because it was a little bit more affordable than a Pro 2 or Pro 4 and a little bit more realistic for a small family operation like us to be able to get into. We were fortunate. We got a good program to start with. I mean, we had to do a lot of work to get it to work for us, but we were able to afford to get into it reasonably cost effective. It made the jump a little bit easier for us. I mean, it was still a big jump, but having everything kind of complete when we bought it really helped out.
Yeah, and that's the biggest stress, right? You know, just having that truck completed the way you want it, but like jumping in and trying to learn it yourself isn't an easy task. And I feel like you adapted very well in a short period of time.
I mean, we got a good truck. Cole was a really good driver. I think he could probably drive pretty much anything, even if it's a piece of junk, it seems like.
Right.
So his driving style and mine are a little bit different. So that was the biggest curve, is to try to get the truck adapted to me. And it's finally starting to come around where I'm getting really comfortable in it, which is super nice.
The buzz around ProLite, especially this year, you know, the entries are down a little bit, but it seems like you and everybody else who's racing that class right now, I mean, Joey and Connor and now Marcus and Sam, everybody's like super committed, super excited about ProLite. Why do you think ProLite is so exciting for the drivers in it? What makes it such a special class?
I think ProLite is, even with the low truck count, I mean, all the trucks are so close and competitive all the time that it still brings an excitement factor. I mean, I know it sucks when a couple of trucks break and there's only a couple left on the track, but from a driving standpoint, I mean, all the top guys, teams that I've ever talked to said that if you can run a Pro Light, it's like a cakewalk stepping into a Pro 2 or a Pro 4 because the horsepower is so high, the wheelbase is so narrow and short, and I mean, they're hard to control, because you got to run them on the ragged edge the entire time you're in there to be fast enough to win the races. And I mean, you see it with Connor all the time. He's running that truck completely on the ragged edge until it's falling apart. And that's how you got to run them to be able to compete with everybody.
I've had that discussion with Brent and plenty of other drivers too, that pro lights are like, for me, looking at it as a fan, I think what makes it so exciting is that those trucks are almost too fast for what they are, really.
Yeah, that could go either way, I guess, because it's too fast, but at the same time, it's just fast enough. So I think if you slow it down, it's going to be too slow almost. It's kind of like a jump from, I would say, the big motor that used to be in a Pro 2, and then you go down to a Pro Spec. You know what I mean? Where it's like, you can tell a difference, but once you run the faster truck, it'd be really hard to go down.
I think what it comes down to is there's probably a difference in the way that you're wired, or that, like, Brent is wired, who, you know, he's willing to drive a Pro Light. You couldn't pay me enough to jump in one of those.
Yeah.
You guys are, I guess, built different.
Yeah, I guess once you get the truck all dialed in to where everything is working perfect, I mean, the suspension is limited, but the truck works really good once you get everything dialed in. I mean, it's really not that rough, and now that Crandon tamed down their jumps, there's really no tracks that beat you up as a driver in the truck anymore. I mean, it's everything's pretty smooth this year so far. I haven't felt like I was bottoming out hard or anything like that. And we had CJ come to Lena with us and do a bunch of shock testing, and that helped out lots on that.
That's what you were saying.
Yeah, that was a major move in the right direction. That's the first time we've ever actually done shock testing in the 4 years we've had the truck. So that was a huge eye-opener.
Well, like, secrets or no secrets, like, bring us and walk us through, like, what you did differently that you would do on a test day. Like, what did he do differently in your eyes that helped it?
I guess the biggest thing was I could just drive the truck. I could tell him what it was doing, and he knew how to correct it without even guessing. Like, he's just so knowledgeable. Him and Johnny on all that stuff, I mean, they've been doing it for CJ's whole life and the majority of Johnny's life, so they just have so much more knowledge of how a shock works and what it's supposed to do and what the truck should be doing. And it was just really eye-opening, and nice to have somebody explain it to you in a way that you can understand it.
Right.
It was
right.
A really nice thing.
Some of the big news coming out of Lena a couple of weeks ago, Pro Light Champ officials had a big meeting. The future of your class was uncertain at that point, but it sounds like there's an agreement now. Pro Light's going to stick around at least through next year with some possible rules changes to maybe invite some drivers back into it. Can you give us some more info into kind of what was talked about in that meeting?
It was kind of a back and forth thing a little bit. I mean, we all as drivers pretty much agreed that if they want the truck counts, we just got to open it back up to where all the guys can run with their carbureted motors and
sure,
pretty much run whatever. I mean, if somebody's cheating, we'll be able to tell, because I mean, it's not like anybody should be running away by 3-4 seconds a lap or something. If everybody's within a second, I mean, it'd be pretty hard for somebody to be cheating in a major way. I mean, we just need the truck count right now, and there's a ton of legal LS trucks out there. It's just we need a little bit of incentive for all the guys to come back. I mean, the price of everything has went up now,
right,
in the country, it's not just in racing. So I mean, just the fuel to get to the track and all the expenses of food and all that kind of stuff, I mean, that plays a big part. And it's not easy for a lot of these teams to travel all the way across the country to race for a weekend and then fly home. So
what would you say, Matt, in your own eyes, what would you say they need to do to help it?
I guess the biggest thing, like we talked about, is they had to tell everybody that it was sticking around first and foremost, because
right,
there was so much false information out there. It's hard to get anybody into a class that they're planning on getting rid of. So nobody wants to invest into it then. But also, I guess we just need to get the, I guess, like the prize money versus what you have to spend to enter a weekend. I mean, that's overall over everything. And I know it's not completely the series' fault or anything. I'm not blaming them. But for sure, if entry fees were down a little bit and then the payouts were a little more, you'd see way more trucks in every class every weekend, no doubt.
Right. You know, I mean, that's been an issue in short course, unfortunately, for what, Brent, 25 years now? 20
yeah,
years?
It has been. It's been so tight to, like, be able to pay out the drivers. It stinks, right? Like, I'm a firm believer. You're the one that is putting on the show. The drivers are putting the show on. And you look at any other sport, you know, there's rarely drivers or athletes that are paying to show up. And I feel it as a whole. We're all trying to grow and build. But I agree with Matt, Shane. I mean, when you're spending $600 a day on entry fee and you win $1,500 for first, you didn't pay anything. You're eating hamburgers and hot dogs all weekend. You know, I mean, that's how I feel. We done it.
Yeah, and like I was invited this year down to event with Johnny Holcher and Dylan Parsons and Chris Van and Elzen down. Joey Sylvester had an event at one of his monster truck shows, and we got paid to participate. Basically, it was just an exhibition race. We got paid to show up. We didn't pay for pits, we didn't pay for entry fees, we didn't pay for anything. Everything was free, plus we got paid just to show up. And that was kind of eye-opening. I mean, it's hard to, like, that's why I didn't go to Wheatland, because I was going there. But it's hard to turn down, like, you're getting paid to race. You don't...
Right.
That's... I mean, if we could get to that point, short course would be so big that they'd have to have qualifying in the truck classes, because there'd be too many.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I do think it is trending back in the right direction now, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, you're on the other side of the fence for me, so maybe you disagree, but I do think it is, you know, it's moving in a positive direction now.
Yeah, and the only other thing I do think is it's nice that they give new racers free entry fees for the year, but all of us that have been doing it forever, we should get something, you know what I mean? At least like a free weekend here or there, something to show, I mean, that they appreciate that we're coming all the time as well.
Well, Matt, they give me a dropped weekend. Or no, that's in Sportsman, right?
Well, Sportsman.
I said that twice this year. Dang, got it. I was trying to help you.
Yeah, that'd be nice, at least. It would be nice if they did that. Because then, I mean, maybe I'd go to California now, right? I don't know if I'm going for sure or not. But if you had one drop weekend and you could skip either Wheatland or California, I mean, that would bring more trucks to the one of the two events for sure, too.
Would you love to be in California, though, if you could afford to do it?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'd be in California if it wasn't going to cost kind of an insane amount of money, really. Cause,
right. Just to get there.
Yeah. And on top of that, my dad and I are the only two that work at our business. So when we're gone, there's no money coming in, plus we're spending all the money, so it's really hard to justify something like that when it'd probably cost upwards of $10,000 to $15,000 for one weekend, where you could save that money and put it back into another engine or something for next year.
So all that being said, though, with Pro Light sticking around another year and, you know, some real efforts to grow the class once again, you know, what does that mean for specifically your future in off-road? Because I got to think that, you know, it would have been hard for you to stick around if there was no class for you, obviously. So what does it mean for you specifically moving forward?
I mean, it's huge. I didn't want to go down, and I can't really afford to go up. So I'm glad that it's sticking around. I hope we can get the truck going up to where it'll stick around forever, really. I don't ever want Pro Light to go away. But the only other thing that I think we could do is we could change, I know lots of guys aren't going to like this, but we could change what the Pro 2 is a little bit. And if we're getting rid of Pro Light, we could take the Pro Light drivetrain, put it in a Pro 2. I know... Ron Sharp said that he could bump the horsepower up of the Pro Light motor and it would last a couple seasons and you'd have half the amount of money into it, half the amount of money into rebuilds. And if we got rid of the underdrives and stuff in the Pro 2, that would drop $10,000 or whatever them things are off of that. And set one gear ratio in the tranny or two or whatever. I mean, a Pro 2 would be the same price as a Pro Light to run then. And none of the fans would know a difference, in, even if they were 100 horsepower less or something like that. And we'd have 25 trucks in Pro 2 or whatever. Like when they used to have the Sporty 2 class, when I used to watch, there used to be, I don't know, probably 10, 15 trucks in there when there was, I think, Juan DeSega and...
Yeah, Mike Oberg for a while.
Yeah, and there was Jerry Edgerton and all them guys. I mean, you really, as a fan, when I was watching, other than the big names in Pro 2, it was just as fun to watch Sporty 2 to me as it was to watch Pro 2, because it was basically like you got to watch two Pro 2 races in the same day.
Tommy Bradley, Dan Bedeau, Rocket Man Show.
Yeah, all them guys. I mean, if we could, if there was a way to make Pro 2 more affordable for everyone, I think they could get rid of Pro Light. It's just the jump right now from Pro Light to Pro 2 is so expensive, but Pro Spec, they say it's cheaper, which I don't know if it's really cheaper. It might be a little bit, maybe. But the jump from Pro Light to Pro 2 is already so expensive. How are you going to make the guys from Pro Spec go to Pro 2 unless you got to...
Yeah, you close that gap a little
bit. Yeah, that's kind of where we're... I guess I'm at is if they're going to get rid of Pro Light, they need to make Pro 2 more of an affordable class for everybody to run.
For the record, I've had conversations with people where I floated that same idea, and people laughed at me because I'm just some guy that doesn't know what he's talking about. So thank you for having my back a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, I even talked to Dan Vandenhoevel about it, and he said, that's probably the best idea I've heard yet. So there is guys that have been in the class that completely agree and understand that it's just got way too out of hand, and we need to bring things a little bit back more to reality. I mean, when like guys can't show up because they can't have a spare engine, I mean, that's pretty bad overall. I mean, your top guys in your sport should be able to afford to run a full season and have enough spares to run a full season.
Right. You shouldn't have to miss the weekend because the motor couldn't last three races, right? I mean, we'll bring us back to the old days when those guys were going through motors like they were socks.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and Dan had brought that up too. He said, yeah, we used to change a motor almost every weekend. And I said, well, there's no way I'd be able to do that, that's for sure.
That's when the budgets were big back then, though. You don't see that huge budget anymore.
I think, unfortunately, the biggest problem is social media. I mean, I'm a young person and I'm even saying it, but if there wasn't social media, the advertising market for short course would still be just as big as it was before. But now everybody can go on their phone and look at all the advertising that costs the companies way less money to put on there, basically.
Right. And it's a lot easier to find, you know, literally anything else to watch when you have, you know, the internet in your hand, like you said. Unfortunately, that means even if there is a race not far from you, but you'd rather watch a Japanese golf tournament, you can. Like, there's so many choices that everything's saturated. It's hard to capture that attention.
That's for sure. I mean, I remember when we used to be scrolling through the TV guide and there used to be the Speed Channel and there'd be Crandon on there or whatever. It'd be like Christmas almost when you seen that on there and be able to watch it.
See, he's like us, Shane, right? It's just another racer that wants to be out there.
I remember staying up till 3 a.m. when some of those races were on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sometimes that was the only chance you got to see them.
Yeah, it used to be. Yeah, and I remember the camera that used to fly across the whole front straight at Crandon and on the cable or whatever they had it on.
Oh, yeah. Well, before we get too sidetracked, Matt, I want to go back to your first win in Pro Light. So the year kind of leading up to it and even the year prior to that, to an extent, you had a whole bunch of close calls, led several races where it looked like you were going to be able to stay out front, especially at the bigger tracks where it seems like you've always done well. Just kept running into one kind of bad luck or another. But finally, round 13 of 2024, you got your first Pro Light win. Can you still remember the feeling of jumping out of your truck and being a winner in Pro Light?
Yeah, that first win is definitely special. I mean, I was lucky enough to get my first win in a side-by-side and truck at Crandon. I mean,
nice.
Crandon is obviously the biggest place in short course, and it's a pretty close one in between Bark River and Crandon for being my favorite track. But yeah, when I hopped out of the truck at Crandon, it was like almost like a relief because I had been so close so many times. And either I made a mistake or there was contact or a caution or whatever. Everything finally came together that day. And it was just a surreal feeling. I mean, I dreamed of it my whole life growing up as a kid, watching there, standing at the fence, going up to the podium for the champagne showers. And once I finally got to do it myself, it was something real special for sure.
You used a word there that stood out to me, and it's actually a word that I had jotted down in my notes to ask you about. You said that there was some relief that came with it. Does it really change your whole outlook after you know that you can actually win a race? Everybody believes they can, but to know that you can, to prove it to yourself, does it make a difference?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially when you've been so close so many times before and something always seems to happen, you kind of start doubting yourself a little bit, to an extent anyways. I pretty much always knew that I could win and it would happen eventually, but when it gets drug along so long like that and being so close so many times, like you said, it once you get it done, it like reassures you that you're moving in the right direction and you're doing the right things to get where you need to be, which is on the top of the podium.
Just that confidence builder, like just working on the truck that next night, right? It's like, you know, you look at your old man, all those hard blood, sweat, and tear hours you put in. It's like, you know, you're fast, right? You put down fast laps. You're right there till the end. But to conquer it, it's just the best in the world.
Yeah, for sure. The effort, like you said, that's put in hours and time. I mean, we work full time together all the time, and then we go home after work and work full time in the shop together all the time. So those hours will definitely never be forgotten by any means. I mean, it's basically living the dream. I mean, nobody gets to do this with their dad. Usually there's very few people that ever get to do it and spend time with them and go through all the highs and lows with them. It's just something real special that I'm super grateful to even be able to do.
Do you have a couple buddies or that, or are you the only two that live up that neck of the woods? Did that help you?
Yeah, as far as in the shop at home, it's just me and him. Everybody else either moved away or went to college or started working or whatever. So other than at the track, I got my uncle there and he spots and helps work on the truck. And then I got a couple friends or cousins that'll come to one race or two here and there whenever they can get time off of work. But the majority of it is just a two-man team. I mean, all the work done at home is just me and him. And it's a little bit better because we're super picky on how stuff is done. So we know everything's done exactly how we want it done. So that makes a huge confidence booster also going into the weekend, knowing that there's nothing to worry about and everything's perfect.
Going back to that first win, since I've got both of you on the line here, I'm wondering, Matt, are you a little salty at Brent that he had to get a podium the same day you got your first win and had to steal some of your attention? I've been joking about this for 2 years running now, so I'm just curious.
No, I'm not upset about it at all, but I was kind of, when I got out of the truck and I looked next to me, I'm like, oh my God, this must have been like a war or something because all these guys are up here. I'm like, Brent's up here. Everybody must have just smashed into each other or something. I was like, I got to watch this race over again. I don't know. I don't understand this.
And then, of course, you go back and watch and we're spending more time talking about Brent than anybody else anyways, right?
Yeah. No, that's all right. I mean, I was so far out in the lead, and no, my uncle didn't
Okay,
tell
dig
me.
it in, buddy. Dig it in.
Yeah.
So far out in the lead, I was baking popcorn.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, Crandon is so awesome because you come out, you go in the cowboy corner, and when you're coming out, you can see that everybody coming down the straightaway. So you know, you pretty much know if you got a good lead or not. If you can't see any trucks coming, you probably got them right behind you. But if you can see guys coming down the straightaway, then you got a pretty good idea that you got a little gap behind you.
I was right alongside you. I remember creeping going to Cowboy and Carson Brown like squared away right at me and I had to get out of it for a second. I'm like, damn you, Matt Wood.
Yeah,
But I said to you right before
that's.
that race, so I'm like, go get one today, and then you won. I was stoked.
Yeah, it was definitely cool. I mean, that was your first Pro Light podium too,
Yeah,
right?
my third day in the truck.
Yeah, so that was super cool.
Yeah, it'll never, I'll probably never run a Pro Light ever again in my life. So it was a great experience. I'm glad I got to share it with you because I know how much it meant to you and your team. And you're from the UP, and it's not easy up here to find sponsors to make it happen.
Yeah, and it was I mean, the last time there was two guys from the UP on the podium, it probably would have been the climb and
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good place to jump on to talking about Bark River this weekend. Like I said, the 50th anniversary. And like you said, it's a place that you watched races for a couple decades before you actually got behind the wheel. Besides the fact that it's kind of your home track, what makes Bark River such a special place? I think for me, it just feels really welcoming. Like it's always felt like, even though I'm from Crandon, Bark River has always really felt like home to me in a way. Do you get that same sense?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely all the people at Bark River are super amazing. All the volunteers, all the track workers, everybody that just surrounds the whole track, the Lions Club, everybody, they're just all great people, super welcoming. Everything seems to run super smooth there. All their track prep and everything's always super fast, and they always have such a beautiful track surface. I don't think I've ever been there other than maybe last year with the two races in one day. That kind of was a little bit tough on it. But otherwise, I mean, it's just a top-notch facility, especially for all volunteer workers. I mean, it's pretty tough to compete with them.
Well, I think one thing that I've noticed about Youpers, being an outsider, but just someone with a lot of friends from up there and close family friends and things like that, is that Youpers seem to have a very strong sense of community, and you all kind of seem to have each other's backs more than anything else. Do you notice that too when you're at Bark River, that seems like you have a few more extra fans in the building?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, usually from like even the merchandise, all my merch is pretty much gone at Bark River, which is unbelievable. But I have so many friends and family and people that I haven't seen forever that just come to Bark River just to see us race because it's close to home, and it's just something special to have all those people there to support you and to support the sport, and especially to like customers even at our shop and stuff that have never been there before and want to come check it out just because we do it. It's really something special to get everybody to the track at Bark River, because if you can get up on the corner, especially across from the Taco Bell Hill, you can see the whole track, and that's pretty rare on a long track like that one is.
Well, Matt, going into Bark River, it's going to be exciting. I know from my eyes that I've been waiting for Bark River since last year at Bark River, so it's just been fun. I know you're from the UP. I mean, you're going to have a lot of friends and family watching live TV. I mean, at the same time, it's like you want to put on a show, and we can't wait to watch you, buddy.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, guys, and hopefully I can go sweep the weekend. That would be the best thing for sure that I could try to do.
Absolutely, man. Make it happen. We hope you do.
Okay, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you at the track.
Well, Shane, before we get to our next guest, we want to remind everybody out there that this podcast is sponsored by AMSOIL. The AMSOIL Shop by Vehicle tool at AMSOIL.com takes the guesswork out of picking the best oil and filter combination for your vehicle. Choose the high product and packaging option for you and enjoy fast, free delivery right to your door. Visit AMSOIL.com to learn more.
Well, our next guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil from Super Stock Truck, another Michigan driver, Brad Barglund. Brad, thanks for finding some time on a busy week to chat with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I want to dive in first to your history and how you got to this point. What I heard is that your first taste of off-road racing was actually as a crew guy, right? You were helping out, I think Brent said, Ben Wandesiga.
Yep, that's correct. Me and my twin brother and Carl Oslin helped out Ben for, I think it was 3 years, and then ended up winning a championship with him, or he won it, but it was cool to be a part of it, and then got a taste of Brent and his brother. So there was two twins on the team, very short period of time, but that was fun, and so I got to meet Brent, and then I always had the itch for off-road racing. Of course, didn't have the funding, and I was young and starting a family and whatnot. So I put that on a back burner and thought maybe I'd come back to it, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that.
But before you got behind the wheel in off-road, I know that you raced sport trucks for quite a while, won some championships at Norway Speedway. You know, what was kind of your path into that? What made you want to go try that kind of racing? And then what were the steps that actually got you back to off-road?
Well, so it all started where I was cheap and I was just trying to build a family first. And then I had a drag four-wheeler just that we dragged on ice, had a snowmobile engine in it, just for fun, you know, probably only had $2,000 into it. So not a big deal. I did that for a few years, and because I always wanted to race and I just wanted to do something. And so I did that, and just to, I guess, to curb my addiction. And so I did that. And then all of a sudden we just saw, I was at Norway Speedway as a spectator in the stands. And all of a sudden these little tiny, what looked like a truck come out and it did make noise like a two stroke. I'm like, wait a minute, what is going on here? I never even heard of them. Never, nothing. Yeah. It was really, really odd. And I didn't even care about watching them race. I couldn't wait to get to the pits after the race, because I'm like, what is this? You know, they're so fast and noisy and just agile. And I'm like, you know, so anyway, long story short, it was, basically an oversized go-kart, no suspension, on Hoosier tires. And it's a two-stroke Yamaha fan-cooled 485 snowmobile engine that powers them, and that's the rule. And so once I learned that, I told my brother, I said, we should do this. And so anyway, we're going to share one just to keep the cost down. He'll race one weekend, and I'll race the next weekend. And he's like, nah, I don't know about that, and whatever. So I did a bunch of investigation on what it would cost and this, that, and the other thing. And it wasn't that bad. And so I talked him into it, and we ended up buying one. And we raced it for, like I said, we shared it. We raced it for about 2.5 years. And then I liked it loose. He liked it tight. And every week we were changing it back and forth, and it was kind of a pain. So I ended up buying my own. And then once I got my own and he could set his up and I set mine up, then we started really doing really well, because we weren't changing everything, because we couldn't get it back perfect every time. And yeah, and then we just, that was in 2014, and in 17, we won a championship together with the same truck. And then I had my own, and then another 6 championships in a row after that. And then they kind of dissolved the class. And I was like, okay, now I'm ready. You know, at that point, now I'm old enough and I got, you know, saved enough money to get into off-road. That's what I've always wanted to do. And so I got into it and bought Kyle Cooper's truck, and it's been a great truck. And of course, making it the way I want it to be, and just pushing forward and trying to do as best as we can.
So, I mean, now that you're off the pavement and on the dirt, and I mean, is that a big, big change for you? I mean, obviously you're hanging it out and hitting the cushion, and on the pavement, you're just trying to not slide off that track. But at the same time, like, what's the difference for you?
The difference is you still slide on the asphalt, because if you're not loose, you're not fast, and that's kind of just the way it is. But right. No suspension on our rigs on the sport truck, so you really got to slide into the corner, because it's kind of like a rear steer situation. No, they're kind of same, but a little different than off-road. But yeah, no, I've always liked the idea of sliding the rear end and having it, you know, turn for you in a way, you know, to help you turn. The biggest learning thing is like you said, when to run the cushion, when not to run the cushion, the blue groove, it's slippery. You're just spinning. The tires are not going nowhere. They're all that kind of stuff.
It's all about studying, right?
It is. And then trying to, and then you ask people and the input and you watch videos. And I watch videos after video on Flow and of our race, other people's race, Pro 2, Pro Light, Pro 4, all of them, because you can kind of get some information off all of them if you really look deep enough and see, and mostly in our class, but you can you know, and Joey Machosik's been helping me, and there's a lot of people that's been helping me and trying to just get that extra edge, because we are there, we're just not, you know, Belanger and Bingfast yet. We're getting there. Kudos to them guys. Even Wurzba, he's been bad fast, and just trying to get to that next level. But to answer the question, I guess I'm comfortable with the back end coming around. I've always loved it, and I thought that's part of the fun of it. And you know, but again, you got to learn the suspension, and there's just as you know, you both know, there's just so much to it. And I wasn't raised in a family of off-road racing, and so I don't have, like, you know, history of, say, like Beauchamp or Wurzba, and you know, there's a lot of them that have the back feet of family that, oh, do this, do that. We've done this. We tried that. That doesn't work. That does. I don't have that, and I'm not looking for excuses, because I'm definitely not. I'm just saying I'm doing what I think is right, and I'm learning as I go, and hopefully eventually we can, you know, be a front runner. I know we're kind of contending, but at the same time, you know, I know where we sit, but I'm okay with that, and I'm willing to push forward and try to make it better and better and better.
After all the success that you had racing on asphalt in the sport trucks, were you expecting it to come easier in super stock truck when you jumped in, or did you know that it was going to be super tough to win in this class?
I knew it was going to be tough. I've watched it, and it's tough. You even watch the guys that do good, and sometimes they don't do good, you know, so I knew it's tough. We had out of the 20 trucks that we raced against in the sport trucks, I would say probably five of them were competitive, way up the high end. And now there's probably 10 of the trucks that in super stock, maybe a hair more, that have really advanced, especially in the last year. But I guess to get back to your question, I never thought I'd get a podium for a few years, because there's no, it's so tight. It's tough. And then, like I say, the learning thing, you got to learn everything. You can go out there and drive and think that you're doing it right, but you really probably aren't, you know? And I learned that there's, it's so fine of a line that you have to, you know, keep on. And it just, it's really tough. But, I just knew that my determination, my heart would prevail eventually. And that's what my goal is. And that's where we're going to keep pushing for, is it's just, I have a never give up attitude, and I'm just going to keep pushing forward and until where we are the Bing or Belanger, you know, and that's my goal. And, every day I strive for that. And so, yeah, it's the only thing I do. I don't have any other hobbies. I don't hunt. I don't fish. I don't travel. This is it. This is my goal. I want to win a championship in super stock. And if it takes 20 years, well, so be it.
That's so awesome, though. I mean, it's all about the passion, though, Brad. And that's what's huge. You know, you can hear it in your voice and how you're explaining it. It's not easy just to jump in a class and do well, and you get your ups and downs. I mean, you know, it's, you got to fight through it, and the class isn't easy to drive in. And I think you just got to keep digging and moving forward, right? You have a bad day, you got to erase it.
Yeah, that's it. Everybody has a bad day. I mean, even pro guys, they have bad days. You know what I mean? I drive through the pit sometimes, and here's Wild Man standing on the top of his truck putting an engine in. You know what I mean? One of the top guys in the division as far as, you know, say as far as backing, you know, financially, and he's standing on the truck putting the motor in, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's heart. You know, that is heart, and that's what drives us to do what we're doing. And you look at it, he could sit back and pay somebody to do it. But you know what? He's up there doing it. And that is, when you see something like that, you go back to your pits and you're like, okay, this is how it is. And that's exactly how it is. And you just push on and do the best you can.
It is nice to have the healthy perspective that at the racetrack, way more people are having a bad day than a good day.
It's a fact. Yes. it is a fact. Yes. Yep. You know, my biggest thing is I was tell the good Lord, as long as I'm safe, I don't care if I take last. As long as you get me off the track safe, I'll take last and be happy with it. And that's true. And that's the way I look at it. And because ultimately we do it for fun and it's a hobby and everything. It's definitely not a job. It sure seems like one sometimes, but it's basically go out there and give her everything you got. But you got to be able to get off the track safely. And if happening to take last place because of it, but you're safe, I'll do that every day.
You talked about feeling like you're competitive, and you definitely have been, but you're still chasing the first win in Super Stock. You've been close. You've had a couple second place finishes. You've led laps. Every time you kind of take a step forward and get closer to that win, does it become more frustrating for you that you don't have one yet, or is it more reassuring that you know that you're getting closer?
Just reassuring that I'm getting closer. I'm fine with not having a win because the class is tough. I mean, like we talked about before, it's very tough, and I don't want the top five guys to break just to win. I don't. That's not how I want to have my first win. Sometimes, you know, could it happen? Sure. Will I take it? Of course, everybody will. But at the same time, I'll chalk it up as it's not a win. It's not a first. It's a podium. But I'm not gonna say I was the best one out there because, you know, I wasn't. But no, I just keep pushing on and trying to get that first win and hopefully many of them. I mean, I remember when I got my first win in sport trucks, it took three and a half years, and it was, wow. You know, and that's exactly where I'm at right now. Well, three and three quarter years for Super Stock. And when it came, I thought it was a dream. I thought there's no way, and I this didn't happen. But it did. And then I won like 28 out of 35. When it starts happening, it starts happening, because once you get it figured out, you figure it out. I think it's going to be way different.
Watch out, Super Stock.
Well, no, it's going to be a lot different with Super Stock, because you know the fast guys, and they're wicked fast, you know, and all the other guys are getting fast. Buffalo, man. I mean, you can't count anybody out now. I mean, everybody's fast. Malachi Yackel, and just it's actually really, yeah, really cool to see. It makes it tougher on my end, but at the same time, that's what we're out there for, is competition. But nose to the grindstone and just try to do the best you can, and hopefully, even if I don't get any wins, if I can just get some podiums and stay out of trouble and mechanically and everything else and win a championship. I mean, Corey Holzer did it. I mean, he didn't like dominate, and he won a championship. And that's, you got to stay consistent. Kyle Cooper did the same thing. He wasn't dominant. He just stayed clean and mechanically good, and he won a championship. And that's the name of the game. And I know that it's just got to happen. We went to Wheatland and got 2/3. The season was great starting off. Went to Anago, and it was a dust bowl. Ran into the wall, ended up getting fourth, which fourth isn't bad. And then Sunday, leading the race, went from sixth to first in a quarter of a lap, and a coil goes out. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, go figure.
But like you said, back to say, there's more people having a bad day than a good day. So, I'm part of the bad day, bad day group. So it is what it is. And I'm happy doing what I'm doing. And it's just awesome. I really wouldn't want to do anything different.
One thing that's really clear is you have a ton of respect for the drivers that you're racing against. And I know that you've, you know, worked pretty closely. Like I think you pitted with Colt at Anago. I saw on social media that you're trying to help Charlie get a little bit quicker, and that's being proven. He's starting to pick up some speed. I don't get the sense, the little bit that I've been exposed to oval racing, stock car racing, that it's the same on that side of things. Why do you think short course has that level of camaraderie where drivers will help out the drivers they're trying to beat on the racetrack?
My look on it, I think it's because it's such a brutal race that when there's 20 sport trucks out there, most of the time 20 finish. Well, when there's 20 super stocks out there, probably five are going to be out.
Right.
You know, and so I think there's more people get more upset because they can't even finish a race. So then you try to help them or trying to calm them down, tell them, you know, it's not all just gas. It's, you know, and I think there's some of that too. It's not just mechanical and tire cut and tire pressures and shocks and stuff like that and whatever else. But when I see a new guy come in, even though I'm newish, yeah, and I see him struggling with a certain thing, if I know the answer, I'm going to give it to him. I'm going to give it to him. I want to be friends with everybody because at the end of the day, this is all just a hobby for all of us. We're not making any money. You know, you don't make no money fishing and hunting. And, you know, like I say, getting back to the old hobby thing. So I'd rather have friends than enemies and on the track. And it's not just because I want them to be a friend on the track. I just want to be friends off the track because it's fun to race them, but it's also fun to hang out with them at the end of the day and at night and whatever else. And, you know, you need a part, you need a tool, you need whatever, and you walk over there, they're just going to help you and you're going to help them. And I don't know, I think it's just, you know, and I'm older too. I'm 50 years old. So I got the old mentality that you help everybody and everybody, it just makes the day go better and the weekend better. And like I said before, if I can help somebody, I'll help them. And if they can help me, I'd appreciate their help. But at the same time, I'm not going to necessarily ask for them. But if I know that they're a good friend, they're probably going to do it.
So what's your plans, though? I mean, going into Bark River, I mean, this is your hometown track. We talk about a lot of local drivers going to get attention. I mean, you want to be on the top three, obviously, no matter what. I mean, being healthy is one thing, but to turn your season around, what do you feel you have to do?
Well, we're sitting fifth in points, which is good, but we're fifth of the fast guys. And so I know where that is. and that's fine. And I'm okay with it because somebody has to be. But with four races to go, I think I'm going to send it basically. And, you know, and I'm a clean driver. I don't bang into people on purpose. I don't bully my way through it. But I might have to, you know, widen the shoulders just a little bit more.
Take the gloves off, like Brent says.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'm really gonna like let her rip because I don't really have anything to lose. I don't want anybody else to hurt them as far as their chances of that, you know, whatever position they could be in. But I am going to be a little bit more aggressive, I can say that, than I would normally be, because there's four races and I'm fifth in points, and I'm just gonna give her, and if it rolls, it rolls. If whatever happens, it happens, and it is what it is. It wasn't from a lack of effort.
One of the cool things about, as we're celebrating 50 years of racing in Bark River, a track being around that long will generate a really strong group of drivers over the years. And, you know, Bark River definitely has that. You look back at, you know, Ben Wandesiga and the Vandermissens, and like you said, the Boshaws, Kleimans, all these drivers who came from the area, Chad Horde, in a sport where, you know, a lot of the drivers, especially on the sportsman side, really are coming from Wisconsin, Minnesota. You've got some Illinois, some Indiana, and some lower Michigan. Do you take some pride in being one of like the fast youpers, like you, Matt Wood, Braden? Is that a point of pride for you to be one of those youpers that's fast?
I would hope so. I never looked at it that way. I just try to do the best I can, no matter where I go or what I do in life and everything. You know, I mean, just not on and off the track, I try to do the best I possibly can with the time I have. But yeah, if you're going to put me with them guys, I'll take it. I don't know if I deserve it, but I'll take it because they're great people and they're fast and they got a great racing program, great families. And yeah, if I can be classified in there, I'll definitely take it.
Obviously, Bark River, a couple days away. I mean, you ready just to load it up and head to Bark River?
It's ready to go. I got a little bit of fiberglass to do when I get there. but very, very little work to do. It's all prepped and ready, other than like a little couple things I said, and just really excited for Bark River. We got a different suspension package than we did last year, and hopefully we can get on that podium, and that's the goal, and maybe our first win. I don't know.
Absolutely, man. I hope that the celebration is not just for the 50th, but hopefully you're able to celebrate as a winner this weekend.
Yeah, that'd be really good. And a lot of my family's coming. Some of the family members, it would be extra special. And we'll see. I mean, all we can do is do what we can do, and we're going up against some fierce competitors, and whatever happens, happens.
Well, Brent, I think we've made a good case that there's a lot to be excited for this weekend at Bark River. The Island Resort and Casino Off-Road Rumble in the UP, rounds 11 and 12 of our Champ Off-Road National Tour. A couple more things I'm keeping my eye on. Stock Truck. We talked about Bark River being the birthplace of Stock Truck some 25 years ago. It's got the biggest field of the year so far for this weekend. Kyle Jenchak's going to be back out. TJ Ewert, who we saw at Lena, is also showing up to Bark River. Tyler Mullins, former championship contender, making his first race of the season. There's also a rookie making his first trip out in the stock trucks. It's going to be great to see that many trucks, I think 12 or 13, on the racetrack at its birthplace in Bark River, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be so much fun to watch. It's going to be a great atmosphere at Bark River, the big high flyway jumps, the big straightaways in stock truck. It puts on a good show. And like I said, Rugacheski and boys like that, Piot, they want to win at Bark River.
Plenty of other big fields as well as we ramp up towards the end of our season. 17 drivers making the call for 1,600 single buggy, 18 wow. in super stock truck. That's going to be fantastic. 15 pro buggies, including the season debut of Zach Jorgensen. It's going to be cool to see him out for the first time this season. Unfortunately, one driver not able to make it, Ryan Mottinger. They had some storms roll through in Indiana. Did a bunch of damage to Ryan's property. He's fine. Everything is fine, but just some property damage, including to his race hauler. They're without power for a couple days, unfortunately, so he had to scratch for the weekend, but still a very healthy pro buggy field. The largest field ever in pro spec, 16 trucks making the haul up to Bark River. That's going to be an absolute brawl. It's going to be fantastic racing both days. And then Pro 2, another big jump compared to what we've seen the last couple weekends. Looks like 11, maybe 12 trucks in Pro 2. And what can you tell us about the Pro 2 field?
Man, hey, I know you're leaning towards what you want me to say, but I'm telling you, we're working our butt off to try to get our truck done for this weekend. I mean, that Pro 2 field keeps on climbing numbers. I mean, it's last minute. People know how it is to get the parts, and we're literally waiting till 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. We're recording on Wednesday here at night. And we're hoping everything comes together. And our goal is to get the truck out there and get on the dirt and rip some laps and see how it feels. Everything's brand new. We don't want to hurt nothing going to the big house, but it's the 50th. We want our truck there on display no matter what. We're going to try to get some laps as much as we can and see how we feel and go from there. But Kenda Tire came on board, helped us out with tires, and can't thank Mike Higgs and Dan Vandenhoevel enough to help us move on into our program and have a healthy tire like that behind us. And there's so many local logging companies that are helping us. No matter if we get out there or not, they're on board with us the rest of the year. And it's just been amazing. Down to my brother Brock, just busting his tail. I've been telling you, Shane, like, he doesn't stop.
Yeah, Brock spent more time in your garage, I think, than at his own apartment.
Oh, unbelievable. But that's what it takes, passion, heart, and soul, and you got to know what you're doing. I mean, we have Joey Machosik, Todd Wallace over here. I mean, we have that's it awesome. Down from the old days to the new days. And, I mean, I've been talking to a couple racers. My parents live 3 miles down the road, and that's where we call shop when we meet up. And they're like, yeah, let me know if you need anything. So we're hustling. Hope to be out there. I'm excited to learn the truck, get going so we can rub some paint with the best in the world in a great way. And it's a great field. Pro 2, Pro 4 is going to be wild. And it's great to see the numbers up. And I hope to be one of them.
Absolutely. And I hope you can make it happen. I know this has been a long time passion project for you and your brother and all your friends. And I want it as badly as you want it. So hopefully everything lines up and you're able to take a green flag in Pro 2 this weekend.
Yeah, thanks, man. And it's all the way down to my parents coming out in the garage. And it brings us back to our old days when we were 15, 16, grabbing the truck out of the woods and putting a cage in it. And now it's like we're working on a Pro 2. And down to my girlfriend, can't appreciate her enough for what she does. She's helping us running parts, my mom and dad running everywhere, helping us out and trying to make it happen. And it takes a big army to get it done. And we'll get there, Shane. And whatever we went after, we tried to conquer. And our goal is to put one foot in front of the other and do it right.
You know, you got a lot of people behind you, both, you know, they're helping you, but also rooting for you. And I'm Heck number yeah, one man. With a bullet on the list. You know that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love you, buddy, man. It's been a great ride with you so far. And, you know, I this is the reason why I went into announcing, right? When I was just still 12, 13 years ago, I want to get back in a truck and everybody should get their dream. And it took me this long. And I just believe that we put the work, effort, and time in, and we're going to see what happens. And I can't wait to announce at my hometown track either. I'm excited for all different kinds of things. Whatever happens, good or bad, hey, we're at Bark River.
Well, you got me fired up, man. That's about the best inspirational note I think we can end this podcast on. Again, 50th running of the Island Resort and Casino Off-Road Rumble in the UP coming at you just a couple days away. Weather looks to be good. High 70s, low 80s, rain possible, but unlikely. Again, take our forecast with a grain of salt. If you'll be at Bark River International Raceway, we do have a few races on Friday starting at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Richard Ault Legacy Long Jump at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And then we go live on Flow Racing Saturday, 9:30 a.m. That's Eastern Time for round 11. So if you can't be there, we sure hope you could be there. But if you can't be there, find us on Flow Racing. And with that, there's nothing left to do but to do it. This has been the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. He is Brent, I am Shane, and we will talk to you again from the 50th at Bark River very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.